This is a Crowd podcast.
Dean Windass, midfielder, striker and Hull City hero. 22-year career taking him to teams including Aberdeen, Borough, Bradford and most other northern teams. Scored the goal that got Hull into the top flight for the first time in their history. Plus, author. But let's see what the book club and our guest George Ellick from Not The Top 20 podcast thought of Dean's 2010 book, Dino, in this week's Football Book Club.
His relationship with peas is just absolutely remarkable.
He could be like Hastings in Line of Duty finding bent refs.
There's no situation where a coach is like, yeah, great, I'm so glad you're naked right now.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Daphne du Maurier, more Serge Aurier. George and Jack had very conflicting responses to that.
That was physically painful.
I can see you suffered from that. Oh. Thanks, Martin Atkinson sends that one. I don't think it's the referee, but yeah.
Imagine how long he's been hanging on to that if it is Martin Atkinson.
Yeah. I'm James Mark, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as David Batty, The Autobiography, and John Parkin's Feed the Beast. But today we're reading Dean Windass's Dino, and reading it with me, Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And please welcome to the show, journalist, broadcaster, and host of Not The Top 20 podcast, George Ellick.
Hello.
Woo! How are you doing, George? Great to have you with us.
It's great to be here. I mean, this is my like ideal thing to do, combining kind of football nostalgia with reading and Dean Windass. It is right down my street.
A lot of your reading involves Dean Windass?
I never thought. Yeah, a fair bit. Well, quite a lot of my like content consumption involves people like Dean Windass and ideally Dean himself. So yeah, I never thought I'd find this perfect niche, but here we are. It's amazing.
glad to make dreams come true on the show. You're a big Dean Windass fan?
I'm an Oxford fan, and for anybody who hasn't read the book, which I'm sure most people listening must have read it already, you know, Dean spent a season at Oxford when I was about 7 years old, and I think when you're kind of that formative age of fandom, and your team signs the record goals, you know, the record signing for your club, and he scores loads of goals, he becomes quite an important part of your childhood. So I love Dean Windass and associate happy childhood memories with him, and then was lucky enough to interview him last summer for a podcast, and now I'm talking about him here. So I'm trying to work out what the next step is for my Dean Windass consumption.
Mastermind maybe?
Or a restraining order maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
It could go one of those ways.
I'm friends. I mean, I know that you had Ivo Graham on the pod a couple of weeks ago, who's a friend of mine, and Ivo actually weirdly did a pedalo ride with Dean Windass this week, so he's already kind of usurped where I can get to. I don't know the ins and outs. He posted a picture on Twitter of him with Dean Windass holding this book, and I saw that, so weird. So I texted him saying, what's going on here? I'm currently reading this. I never thought you and I would be exchanging notes on Dean Windass's autobiography. And he said, just something for work, and then sent me a picture of him and Dean Windass side by side in pedalos somewhere in Hull.
Oh my God.
So I don't know, you know, I don't know how I can then out Windass him again, but I'm going to have to find a way to do it.
Jury's ass. That's tough. That is generally tough. Once you've been on a pedalo with Dean Windass, that is very hard to beat. We need to get Ivo back on to explain that story to us.
Yeah, I've never been more jealous of someone else in my life ever. Imagine what a day just sitting pedaloing with Dean Windass.
Yeah, amazing.
God.
What a way to end lockdown. Dean was only at Oxford for a season, right, George? But he still made a big impression on you.
He made a massive impression. He scored two goals against Swindon, which is always pretty important, given we hate Swindon very much. And he scored a very big goal in the FA Cup in a game against Chelsea when Chelsea were quite good. And that the injustice of that game has lived with me forever, to the extent that I can even remember the referee's name. It was Mike Reid. And there was
EastEnders star.
Exactly the same one. But there was if you ever mentioned Mike Reid's name in our house when I was younger, there was, you know, a penny in the penny jar. His name was Mud with us.
Wow.
Was it like, you're being such a Mike Reed right now.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, stop being such a Mike Reed. Those games were, I think having matches like that when you're a young fan and having characters like Windass are pretty important to making you quite obsessed with whoever you support. So I've got Dean to thank for many trips to Oxford and away days over the years. And even though he didn't even last a whole season, but he was, he was a hero.
He's a bit like Klinsmann to us Spurs fans, I guess. Mm. He kind of popped in for about 5 minutes, scored loads of goals, then
changed everything, and then left.
Went to someone better. That is pretty much how. But then, of course, a lot of people, George, know you from Not the Top 20 podcast, and they know you're an expert on the EFL. And it must have been quite nice to you to read a book where Dean, first of all, played for most teams in the Football League, but if he didn't play for them, he either scored against them, was linked to them, or was sent off against them. So there's, he takes off pretty much every club in there. So stay tuned as we celebrate the career of one of football's biggest characters, Dean Windass. Okay, over the show, we're going to be going into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and Ken's back with another charm. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying about the book. The book has 4.2 stars out of 5. Not bad.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. That's pretty good.
Yep, not too bad, including this 4-star review from Mr. Miller. It starts off with an ellipsis, weirdly. ellipsis, you don't... Yeah, very. You don't need to... I think he's written like a much longer review somewhere else. So this is an abridged version.
Do you think you're supposed to piece them all together and it makes like one giant super review?
You don't need to be a Dean Windass fan to enjoy this book. Maybe you don't even need to be a football fan. It's just a really fast-paced, funny read. Dino might never make it as a household name, but it'd be a lot funnier than a lot of people are on telly all the time. There are downs as well as ups. Lots of both, but it's a great read in the weekend kind of read. So, first things first, what TV show would we like Dean to host? And secondly, what do you think of the book? That's the more important one. Jack.
This is a really good question. Probably, I mean, I can only think of Bring on the Wall. Like,
that's what I was thinking. He'd make a good Danny Dyer on the Wall.
He would make it. Oh yeah. Either you've got the old style Dale Winton Wall, where you have to make the shape. That'd be pretty fun. Or Danny Dyer's The Wall. Yeah. Either any wall based program is where I want to see Dean Windass. We've
already hit the limit for the amount of times we say wall in the podcast. So that's gone. But more importantly, did you enjoy the book, Jack?
I really liked it. I thought it was really, really fun. I think the main appeal for me, and I appreciate that this isn't going to be for anyone else apart from this particular book club, is how many other people that we've read were mentioned in this book. Like, it was like all the big hitters. We've got Cammy's time at Stoke, at Bradford, and then Geoffrey Richmond, the chairman of Bradford. So we had like that different side of things. Neil Redfern makes loads of appearances when he's at Bradford.
Well, he had a very similar career to Neil Redfern in many
very
ways.
Very similar career
for
to
a lot
Neil
of,
Redfern.
Lot of clubs. Sorry, George, this is incredibly rude of us. Just talking about all the other episodes we did without you on time.
But it sort of felt like an alternate history, almost like, you know, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Sure.
This is far too highbrow immediately to kick off.
Amazing comparison. What a comparison that is.
But we sort of, it feels like we sort of got the Neil Redfern Cammy side, and then behind the scenes we've got the Dean Windass side. What's going on while we don't see what's going on with Dean Windass during Cammy's career? And also Paddy Kenny comes up in this loads. Oh god, it was just it felt like a satisfying extension of the Football Book Club universe. Yeah.
I was gonna say, actually, I'm glad you mentioned Paddy Kenny, because I think the only thing we had so far about Dean Windass that we knew of from our podcast was when Paddy Kenny told us that for lack of a better word, he went to the toilet on the Belfry Golf Club, and I didn't expect, I thought this was something maybe was a secret, and Paddy was just, because you know he doesn't care what he says in the book, he says everything. However, Dean Windass is pretty frank about what happened on that. We're sparing the details in the podcast, though.
I would argue he's needlessly graphic about it.
I think that's the case with quite a lot of stuff in the book, where he goes, he tells you what's happened, and the last sentence you're like, Dean, we didn't need that. There's one line in particular that I don't think I can really read out and continue doing my job, basically. So I think we've got to...
Does it involve shoe polish? Is it the shoe polish?
It involves shoe polish, yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what that is. Yeah, none of us can read that out.
That is where we will leave it. George, you enjoyed the book?
I love the book. I've also got an answer for the game show, because Ooh. I would like to see, because you know how like all good game shows will go through two lives. You know, you have the initial big hit, then nothing, and then the reboot. And yes. I'd like to see Dean Windass host the reboot of Deal or No Deal, which is yet to have its reboot. I feel like his conversations with the banker would be incredible, and he would buy.
I love that so much.
So that would be my idea there. And, you know, Dean, I'm happy to kind of pitch it together with you. But then in terms of, I loved the book. I thought it was an amazing change of pace for my general reading. And
what was the last book you read before this? Just an interest
I mean,
to compare it
to. The last book I read before this was A Little Life. So it's quite a different... It's quite a different change of pace. Yeah, I don't know many comparisons between Juice St. Francis and Dean Windass. But yeah, it's just, it actually made me think. I mean, I've listened to the pods a lot, and so I know that I enjoy hearing you guys talking about the books, but it's made me think that maybe I should, you know, read like a modern classic and then an autobiography and then a modern classic and then an autobiography.
Like a double bill kind
of thing. Yeah, exactly. Just, well, I guess it's that same idea as when... when Ashley Cole spoke about cheating on Cheryl, and he said, you know, every so often you need a cheeseburger. It's like caviar cheeseburger.
and obviously we're the caviar.
Yeah, of course.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, George, I know that you live down the road from me, and I've got a whole cardboard box of millions of books. So
amazing.
Take your pick, please. take your pick. I might give you the ones that we didn't enjoy as much first. But, anyway. Tash, you enjoyed the book?
I just... absolutely loved this book. I found it so enjoyable. I felt like I was watching a sitcom reading this book. I felt like things happened to this man rather than him making things happen. And watching him respond to the way that the world deals his hand is just amazing. You know how like in a good sitcom, you can put a character somewhere and you know how they'll react. You can put them anywhere in the world. And, you know, it feels a little bit like that. You know, that's why we love Ron Swanson or Homer Simpson or Michael Scott, because you can dump them in a car park and they'll do something funny. Well, Dean Windass is exactly the same.
And often in a car park.
Yeah, there's a lot of car parks in it.
There's a lot of car parks in it. Like, there's a bit where within a couple of pages, he watches Stan Collymore shave his ball sack. And then he bandages up Stan's face so that the press think he's had these terrible injuries, which just made me think of like an episode of What's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And then two pages later, everything's back to normal. And then two pages later, he's shitting on the Belfry golf course with Karen Brady's husband, which is, you know, very Mark Corrigan of him. Like, he does all of the big hitters of every sitcom, and I loved it.
Yeah,
you're right. That is such a Peep Show moment.
Yeah,
I can definitely envisage in my head Mark Corrigan going, "Oh God, what am I doing? Here I am on the Belfry golf course."
Different phases of his life. Like, he goes to Bradford and they're kind of having money difficulties, so he briefly becomes an accountant. And then he goes to a car park one day and he somehow gets sent off from a game before it's happened. Like, all of these things are just so ridiculous. That's just why I love it.
Is this book the influence for all of like 21st century sitcoms?
Yeah, there's scenes in this book that have influenced all of our favourite TV programmes.
Yeah, this is like, it's like the Marx Brothers kind of.
Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong have been reading this book. This is brilliant. Yeah. Put this straight in.
Incredible.
Yeah, I loved it.
I'm really glad you liked it, Tash. I also really enjoyed it. Firstly, I was surprised by how many sexy Dean Windass pictures there are in the book. Uh-huh. In my one, anyway. Some controversy here. I gather, Tash and Jack, you have a slightly different version, because our one, to fill you in, George and I have a copy of the book where it ends quite abruptly, just after Hull have fought off relegation for the first time in the Championship, I think, the year before they get promoted. Via the playoffs, which of course most people remember Dean Windass for that really famous goal at Wembley that got Hull promoted to the Premier League the first time. However, we didn't have that, but Jack and Tash, you did have that bit in your book.
Yeah,
best bit of the book.
So
loved
good.
It.
But did you have the sexy Dean Windass pictures? Because I had a lot.
So I read it on Kindle, and mine were all right at the end. But oh my God, there's so many that It's, you know how you have the percentage bar at the bottom? There was like 20% of the book left and it was just pictures of sexy Dean Windass. It was great.
That is the kind of book we like on the
just
show.
Just so you know, George, I tend to read these books in the bath. So there was a real uncomfortable moment where I was like, do I sit in the bath reading 20% of this book of just sexy
Not
pictures
reading.
Of him? Like, is this
just
a bit...
flicking through pictures
yeah,
of Dean.
Is this yeah. a bit uncomfortable? I don't know. I did it just, you know.
Imagine course, if your fiance obviously. Walks in on that. How do you explain that? How do you explain that away? How do you explain
like,
that?
It's only Windass. It's fine.
Yeah. But we had all these very sexy Dean Windass pictures, and I really enjoyed that. But also, I was very impressed. Not impressed. I was very surprised by like how honest it is right from the very beginning of the book. Like a lot of books that you've read, which I kind of thought maybe Dean Windass's book would fall into the realm of. You know, very fun, a lot of pitch banter, you know, the change rooms, funny things that happen, funny stories that happen on and off the pitch. And there is a lot of that. But also, like, from the beginning, he goes into so much depth straight away. Like, he talks within, by the third, fourth page, he talks about his parents' divorce and how he didn't get on with his mum's new partner. And I thought... He showed a lot of vulnerability in it, and you could see that throughout his career, and I thought it was really, really brilliantly written. I mean, some of the bits are a bit brief because a lot of the chapters are very short and they disappear on there, and I would have happily read loads more about it, but I don't mean that as a huge criticism. I just generally thought there was so much in there. It was fascinating.
I think what was really interesting about that was the way that a lot of times with these books, it's everything's defined by football. So like the most important milestone is when you get signed by Hull. But with him, he was talking about his parents breaking up and, you know, the trauma with his brother who kicked him out when he couldn't pay rent. Like a lot of things that were really serious going through. And then was sort of saying, oh, I was a schoolboy playing for Hull at this time.
He's working the Bird's Eye Factory for quite a lot at the beginning of the book, packing peas and stuff. And
oh,
he's,
I love that bit.
Which is, yeah.
It's amazing that his relationship with peas is just absolutely remarkable.
It goes through so many different layers. Know, it's so yeah. weird.
I didn't realise there was so much work went into preparing a bag of Bird's Eye peas.
It was a bit, because he moves on from peas to rice, and then he says, like, by the end of it, I couldn't look at a curry.
Yeah.
Like, that's how traumatized he was by having to go through all of this rice packing.
This was, like, one of the bits that I kind of was just so perplexed by, where it seems the way he talks to the reader is as if we all know the relationship with peas and rice in a peas and rice factory. You know? Like one of my favourite lines in the whole book is when he says, they say that football is the land of milk and honey, but my road to success was covered in rice and peas. It's just like, what? And it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's just so great. The rice was pissing me off just like the peas had done. It's just absolutely amazing.
You know, I got,
what a
turn
of phrase.
As we all do, I got pissed off with rice. Yeah.
We haven't had that in any book so far. No one. I mean, yeah. We've had some other weird jobs. I think
Grant Holt worked at the tire factory. That was fun.
Yeah, and Jason McAteer. He didn't work in the sweet factory, did he? He lived next to a sweet factory or something, didn't he?
He lived near, and he had to go for training in the Hovis factory, I think, at one point. And also, like, he went training near a nuclear reactor at one point as well. That was very weird.
George, that's the first book I'm going to give you. Jason McAteer's book. Yeah.
Great book.
And we all know, I mean, about Dean Windass. I mean, I think anybody knows that he's like a character, and you can tell in the book that there's a lot going on in there. I mean, he's not somebody, you know, you can see the way that he talks about his family life and about his jobs and about the way he talks about people as well. You know, he's a guy who's very much kind of in his own head. And even now we know with his, you know, his social media activity and stuff. And you could tell
Absolutely.
When I was speaking to him, you know, he's somebody who football is something that he needs in order to kind of keep him focused and aligned.
Yes.
And it's almost, I found it quite sad in a way. The amount of times that he talks about wanting to become a manager and go into coaching.
Yeah.
And it's sad kind of reading this now and seeing that that isn't something that's happened for him. It's a shame.
You're absolutely right, because he talks about that a lot. He says a few times in the book, says he's a bit worried about hanging up his boots at this point. Because obviously we haven't got the chapter where Hull get promoted. And he had a couple more seasons after that. But you can see he's a bit worried throughout it. And yeah, you know, as George said, Dean has been very frank since about some of the struggles he's had post football career, and he's mentioned before how he wished the FA could have, you know, support a lot of players who retired before, and that's come up in other books we've had. And you know, I just thought it was brilliant, and I still think it's brilliant that Dean spends a lot of his time on social media and other places being quite honest about how he feels. And it helps you really get a sense of the person who many think is, as Jaws says, just this huge, colourful character on the pitch, you know, pulling like Gazza-like pranks and stuff. But there is, you know, something else. There's a lot more going on behind him.
And do you also notice with his how much he would always refer to everybody by name, like irrespective of whether they were an old teammate, a manager, or anybody that we were meant to know, but also just everybody from his youth as well.
Yeah,
he would give them their full name. Yeah, it's great. I mean, there's one bit where he's talking about how he used to go to the pub when he was younger, and he says, lads like Gary Harrison, Gary Duncan, Paul Baines, and David Schultz looked after me, and we get me a pint later. I mean, who the hell are these guys? Well, we don't know who these guys are.
I was genuinely searching Wikipedia being like, David Schultz. Yeah, okay, like, I see.
Did these guys go into massive things, or are you just telling us your mates' names when you were younger? Do they know
like
you've done this?
He's one of those people that you'd meet one time and you feel like you could invite him to your wedding, or you could like drop him a text and go for a pint. He just gives
that
vibe.
I know what you mean by that. Yeah,
Tash, that's awkward because I haven't invited him to my wedding. So if he's listening to this, I'll get a Larry DM from Dean. Yeah.
So, as he mentioned, after he does eventually start his professional career with Hull, he does well at Hull. They need some money. They send him off to Aberdeen. But I wanted to ask you about his next club, George, a club very close to your own heart, as you mentioned, Oxford United. You've mentioned this Chelsea game. Any other big memories, George, of Dean at Oxford?
I mean, loads. Yeah, he was our kind of... He came at a time when we were actually quite good, and then we got unbelievably bad immediately as he arrived. Because we, you know, it was 98-99 season, I think, so I was, 8 years old. And he came in and we'd just finished mid-table, as he says, but we just finished mid-table in what is now the Championship. So I thought I was getting involved in a team who were going to be kind of challenging to get promoted into the Premier League. We got relegated that season. We got relegated again, I think, the season after with a record low points. And then about 3 years later, we were in the conference. So it was kind of at a time where there was lots of hope and that was stripped down immediately. And Dean Windass was brought in from Aberdeen as our record signing. And I'm pretty sure we never paid Aberdeen for the amount.
Don't mention it. Don't say that now. No. Aberdeen might be listening.
We either didn't pay them or we didn't pay them until we'd sold him, which was why we sold him. We basically said, yeah, we'll pay you 400,000. They were like, where's our money? It's been like a year. But he came in, and if it wasn't for him, I think we would have been a lot worse. And the, you know, the Swindon goals were great. But it was the Chelsea game that was the big one, because I think it was John Terry's debut for Chelsea playing at left back for them that day. It was at the Manor. I couldn't go because we only had two season tickets, and so my dad and my brother went, and I was 7 and I watched it. I know. Yeah. I'm still living
given
it.
Them.
And I watched it at home with my mum on Sky, and we went 1-0 up through Windass, and it was just unbelievable. They had Zola, Viali, Leboeuf, Desailly. I mean, all of these guys all playing, and they're in a way, because we were so bad, even though it was only one kind of league gap, it felt like it was just a massive David versus Goliath. And they scored in the last minute due to, which Dean says, Kevin Francis, who was 6'9", I think he was, who he said he went through the back of him, but I'm convinced that it's a dive, goes through the back of Viali, and Leboeuf scored the penalty very late on. And I went to Stamford Bridge for the next game, which we lost 4-2, and Windass scored again. But they were, like, I love the FA Cup. Like, it really annoys me when people talk about the FA Cup being nonsense, because as somebody who supports a team who've had some unbelievable days recently in the FA Cup, it's like the one bit left of football from this era that I think still exists. Like, it's amazing to go as a League One or a League Two fan and going, and it doesn't matter if they're playing a rubbish team and you beat them, then that's their fault for playing a crap team. Like, that's it. And I think that's kind of born within those couple of games against Chelsea. I'm still smarting, you know, all these years later.
I totally agree.
We all have a game like that.
I went to see Port Vale at Man City last Christmas, and watching Tom Pope score was one of the best moments of my life. So I am totally with you on that.
But from his Oxford United time, I found one bit particularly... they're generally very dramatic, which means, I guess, it lends itself quite nicely to a little feature we have called the dramatic reading. So, George, as our guest this week, could you please say the words cue dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Expertly done.
That
Thank you very
great.
Much.
Well, let's use that every week.
just use play that.
It in. It's all those ad reads.
So this week's story is right from the beginning of his time at Oxford. It's called Dean Windass is held at gunpoint by a man named Ken. And that's not our Ken, by the way, as far as we're aware. It's not our Ken.
God, listen to my song. Yeah. It's about Michael Dubarry.
So the story kicks off. He staggered towards me, the gun in one hand, an empty whiskey bottle in the other. I cowered in the corner of the changing room, absolutely shitting myself. The rest of the... Yeah, that kind of underplays all the drama. Yeah, it's really...
I mean, but to be fair, it's understandable.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure. But it's very, like... It sounds like a real tense novel at that bit. And then when he says, I'm absolutely shitting myself, he kind of... I'm taken out of that world a little bit. The rest of them are bolted the moment he came stumbling in. The first shout of, where's Windass? And they were all gone. I was on my own. I tried the door, but it wouldn't budge. I was trapped. So you're Windass, he slurred, fixing me with his drunken stare. I nodded and pleaded with him not to kill me. It was the most petrifying moment of my life. This couldn't be happening.
Genuinely, sorry. Next to my notes, I've just got, what the fuck? What is happening at this moment in this book?
This is the beginning of a chapter. There's no preamble to this at all.
Have I fundamentally misremembered Dean Windass's career? Is there a famous hostage negotiation that he has to go through? It's so weird.
This couldn't be happening to me. 1 minute we were sat there listening to the manager, Mally Shotton. Mally Shotton? What a strange name. 1 minute we were sat there listening to the manager.
Yeah, that's the strange thing here, James.
No, his name is Malcolm. I've never heard anyone call him Mally.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. 1 minute we were sat there listening to the manager, Malcolm Shotton, go through the itinerary for pre-season and preparing for a trip to Exeter. The next I'm staring down the barrel of a pistol-waving madman.
I'm from Shotton to Shot.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm going to shoot you, you bastard, he roared as the gun shook in his hand. I really thought I was a goner, but all of a sudden, the expression on his face changed. A broad smile broke out as he dropped the weapon, stuck out his hand. My name's Ken, and welcome to Oxford United Football Club. Bastard! The door flung open, and all the other lads all piled in to take the piss, including Mally, Malcolm. So this was my initiation ceremony, my welcome home to English football. Of course it was a fake gun, but it was very convincing. Just ask my pants.
What? Just ask my pants.
Yeah. That sounds like a game show. That sounds like a good game show.
I'm Dean Windass, and welcome to Just Ask My Pants.
This is genuinely, like, I have so many questions, and as an Oxford fan, I want to know how many times this has happened, George.
I mean, I hadn't heard about this before reading this chapter, although I enjoyed the bit afterwards, which must be, it can't be true that with Paul Tait, Ken ended up chasing him all the way, like, through the fields and onto a golf course. I just can't believe that's real.
Yeah, it's like something out of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It's absolutely insane.
Paul Tait signs and that's exactly right. And then Tait turns around and hits this Ken chap and breaks his arm with a golf club.
I feel like that is a story that has developed over, like, it's been told in the pub 50 times, and every time it's told, it gets a little bit more ridiculous. Yeah. I just love the line in Dean's recollection of it, where he says, you know, I genuinely thought I was a goner, suggesting that he was sitting there in a changing room with a guy holding a pistol in his head, thinking, yeah, this is it.
This is how I go.
I'm about to die here. This is so scary. Because that must be...
how traumatic that is.
I hope in my life I'm never put in a situation where I'm sitting in the corner of a room with someone holding a gun at me, thinking, yeah, this is the end for me. That is probably the most scary thing that could happen to anybody.
I'll be honest, George, I'm not surprised he left Oxford after 33 games. It's time for this week's Out of Context, Dean Windass. So this segment, George, we ask everyone on the show to bring a sentence they like from the book without explaining what it is. Just something they enjoyed in isolation. Do you have one for us, George?
I do, yeah.
Oh, please.
He was very skinny, like a streak of piss.
I love that line, because you are like, I know what a skinny person looks like. Yeah, but yeah. Let me clarify for you. Like,
it's so unnecessary. About a guy that he quite likes as well, in Steve McLaren. It's just...
Is that
incredible.
Who he's described? Oh, yeah, because he's at Hull. Yeah, he played with him at Hull very briefly, didn't he?
Also, I'd like him to describe all England managers as different types of piss.
Yes.
Talking of Steve McLaren does one of the most irritating things I've ever heard of in this book, where he puts motivational quotes around the changing room at Middlesbrough so that people stumble upon, like, things by Michael Jordan and stuff. He's like an Instagram account. He's just like one of these quote of the day Instagram accounts saying things.
He used to hide them about the place as well. So you open a locker and then, an inspirational quote will just fall out.
Am I the only one who found this as annoying? Maybe it's just me.
There's a big thing saying sacrifice that was on the wall. Just says sacrifice.
That was in the Oxford United changing rooms. I'm sure.
What, you are the sacrifice.
Yeah. Ken will be.
Nice. Tash, our context.
He said, he wore two different boots. He looked a right mess, but it got him a few extra bob from sponsors having two companies on his feet. What?
Yeah, that blew my mind.
Smart.
I did not know you could do that.
That kind of been what Colin Moore was actually doing.
George, it's no context club. It's no context club. We can't. I think it's Steve Claridge though, just to ruin no context.
Yes,
club.
It is. Yeah. Sorry. Claridge and McLaren both been outed there in no context club.
That's true. And they like to have their identity protected. I'm going to out someone as well. My out of context. The first time I met Paul Jewell was at Centre Parks in Nottingham. We bumped into each other and won the indoor pools.
That mental image is so lovely.
That story. What a shame. And Jack,
I get a bit pissed off at away games because I can't do any hoovering first.
Beautiful. Well, that's out of context club. And there'll be more Dean Windass after the break as we bring you some Neil Warnock related drama. And we go back to school with Sean Gosa.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We will do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks.
Hello, I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't.
I actually love interaction with people.
I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we're reading Dean Windass's Dino. And just during the break, Jack has dropped a huge bombshell on us from the dramatic reading.
I was just looking at the dramatic reading to, you know, relive the drama. In my version, the updated version, he says, instead of saying, my name's Ken and welcome to Oxford United Football Club, he says, my name's Terry and welcome to Oxford United Football Club.
Yeah, he does
Club.
In mine as well. I can confirm.
Wow.
What's going on there? Is there a famous Terry that we should know about, George?
There's a famous Ken. So there's Ken Fish, who played for Oxford and Port Vale.
Sounds like a man of Andy Krabs.
Maybe Ken came back with the gun and said, if you don't change my name in the updated version, you're getting it.
Call me Terry, punk.
Dean forgot it was a...
Sue Dean. For what we talked about earlier, for saying everyone's name without asking them for permission.
Also, I love the idea of being like, oh, no, yeah, sorry, it's not Ken. It was a guy, let's call him Terry. Anyway.
In my version of the book, he doesn't play for Aberdeen. He goes to Inverness Cali Thistle. So it's just very hard and loose with the Dean Windass story.
It's like a Mandela moment. The universe split in split in two at this exact moment.
But there's plenty of other great characters in the book. About halfway through, Dean goes on loan to Sheffield United, where he meets one of our favourite characters we have, Neil Warnock. George, did you enjoy seeing Neil pop up?
This was my favourite part of the book, I think, was the Neil Warnock story. Because what I loved is, at the beginning, basically he goes on loan to Sheffield United and Warnock's manager there, and he does really well, and they get into the playoff final, and he is dropped from the squad for the playoff final. And before he starts telling this story, he says, people ask if I had a fallout with him, but he was never around for me to fall out with. And then goes on this kind of rant about how Warnock always spent all his time down on the South Coast at home and it was never there.
Yeah, and Kevin Blackwell just did the training sessions.
Exactly. Yeah. And then proceeds to give us probably a 15-page blow-by-blow account of him falling out with Neil Warnock. So he's basically just included that bit just to have a dig at Warnock for never being there.
That's very true.
And then
Or the idea that he must have gone down to the South Coast in order to have this fallout with Neil Warnock.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But my favourite bit about this, and it was the one part where, you know, I love films. I love watching films. I basically go hunting, even for like bad twists in films. I liked to know I'm going to watch a film which has like a moment when you're like, whoa, and turning the page and seeing after, you know, this blow-by-blow account of how Warnock asked Windass to like pretend he had a groin strain and Windass wanted to hit him and how he'd lost all respect for him, turning the page and seeing that the next chapter was written by Neil Warnock was that moment of like, oh my God, what? That is unbelievable.
It's like that moment in Gonga where you open it and you're like, oh my God, this is written by her.
I don't think we'll ever read a book on this podcast that Tash doesn't think is a bit like Gone Girl. I think Gone Girl every single time we do this. The Neville's book is a little bit like Gone Girl.
That was like Gone Girl, but I don't know which one's which.
But yeah, it was. I wrote the same. I my note on that page was, ooh. It was a real, it just got very tasty. I loved it hearing it, because that doesn't happen anywhere else in the book, apart from right at the very end. There's no other moments where anyone else writes. It's always Dean. So to change perspective is
But the sad part about it, I thought, was that, you know, you have this account from Windass where he's, you know, he's so angry and he sits in the pub and watches the game on his own. And, you know, you can feel how much he kind of hated Warnock for making that decision. Mm. And then Warnock is so nice in the whole chapter.
Yeah,
he's just there being like, I completely understand. It was awful. Like, yeah. You know, yeah. Poor bloke. Yeah. I get it.
He says things like, "Oh yeah, I felt exactly the same towards some managers, and I was young, and I totally understand. I would have hit. In his situation, I'd have hit him as well. I'd have wanted to hit me as well.
In the paragraph as well before the by Neil Warnock chapter, the manager's view. Dean says, when it comes to dealing with players, Neil doesn't give a fuck about anybody else apart from himself. Okay, and then the next paragraph is written by Dean Warnock, which I think is an amazing way of introducing, you know, your guest writer in a book.
Yeah, yeah.
A man who needs no introduction because he's a dick.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Neil Warnock.
It's that paragraph as well where he says, "I called him a see you next Tuesday, and he agreed with me." Isn't it? Isn't that like the final bit of it?
Yes.
I mean, that's so interesting because Neil is both like, yeah, he was absolutely right to get so angry with me, but also doesn't seem to regret what he did.
No.
So it's not like, oh God, I was so angry with him at the time, but then I realised, well, you know, afterwards that I'd made a mistake.
He makes the point, doesn't he, that, well, if Dean does become a manager, he'll totally understand. So I'm not angry with him.
He'll have to do it
to
himself.
He'll have to do it as well, yeah.
He completely rationalised it, which I thought was very, like impressive on Neil Warnock's part. As in, because I can imagine you'd have to be like coming in to write a book about, or to, you know, have something written like that by Dean Windass, and then being like, yeah, he's right, but also I did it for this reason.
It's like they've been to couples therapy, and they're both allowed their say. You know, they're both allowed to
mediation.
Yeah.
When you call me a see you next Tuesday, I feel attacked.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to hope Neil Warnock's book has got his side of the Windass thing, much like this has got the other side of everything else. George, you gotta come back and read whatever his book's called.
Naked in the Changing Room, the Neil Warnock story.
Warnock and Almost Beast, certainly. Right?
Very nice. Very nice. It's not just Neil Warnock he doesn't always get on with, though. Jack, there was, you know, someone else pretty important to Football Match he doesn't have the best of relationships with.
Yeah, do you mean all referees? because Dean Windass has a very odd relationship with referees in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. Because, you know, Dean Windass is a very sort of like colourful character. You can imagine that he wouldn't be liked by referees or that they kind of find him irritating. Obviously, that happens quite a lot where he gets sent off. I think we've talked about it. He gets sent off 3 times in Scotland in one game, he claims, where he gets sent off for a bad tackle. He gets sent off for foul and abusive language. And then he gets sent off for kicking a corner flag.
Which is so, and he
calls Hugh Dallas like a series of horrible words. Hilarious. But what's interesting is that like a lot of the referees tend to give it back as well in a way that I hadn't necessarily expected. Like he talks about Jeff Winter, where he at one point against Liverpool, he kicked a football against Jeff Winter's head, like really, really hard because he was angry that
by mistake.
But apparently he kicked the ball really hard and then just ran into all the other players to be like, oh, gotta get out of here, gonna lose myself in the crowd.
The glory days Winter, before VAR.
Jeff Winter came back with like, you know, a black eye going, who did that? And it's just Dean Windass being like, never mind. You know, like Dean Windass will say like, you know, ref, what was that? And Jeff Winter will say, you know, who's reffing this game? Is it you or me? And it seems quite like it's more of a friendly, equal relationship than I thought it was going to be. There's another bit where a referee, they lose 4-0 and Dean Windass is like, he doesn't get a penalty. And the ref says, you should probably sort out your defence. It's 4-0, and does like the hand symbols for 4-0. Like, a ref shouldn't be doing that.
I agree.
That was
the Jeff Winter stuff was on a level where it was kind of like, it's a bit of banter and stuff, but
I would like to read the chapter written by the referee in response to that, because I feel like he may deny it.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
That bit would be like Dan and Eminem. It would be like
a response.
Yeah. It would be so good.
Wait, that player I should have sent off. Yeah. It was you. Damn.
I was thinking more JoJo and not JoJo. I was thinking more who sang F You Right Back?
Eamon and Frankie.
Did you know that Dido's first son is called Stan?
No.
Wow. That's
fundamentally bizarre.
Isn't that really weird?
Don't like that.
Incredible.
Yeah. Stanley, to use his full name. But, you know, I think you should have made the connection, you'd think.
Yeah. Do you think she, just as she like sent off the thing to be like to register the birth, she was like, "Oh no,
oh no, oh, I
wait,
see what I've
that
done."
Really famous song I was on. I just call it No Angel instead.
There's another bit with a referee where he, there was what Tash was talking about, where he gets sent off in the car park, where he's having a bit of banter with the referee during the match, and you know, he says, you know, the referee, you're blind, what are you doing? And the referee says, you're just like Gazza, except you know you're as fat as Gazza, but you don't have the talent. That's a referee saying that to Dean Winder during a match, which is one of those things which is like fundamentally bizarre. But he afterwards in the car park, he says he's having a bit of banter with the ref. He sees him again and he says, stick to your day job, you prick, as he's driving off.
Dean Windass says that to him.
Dean Windass says that to the referee as the referee, and he thinks it's a bit of banter, it's a bit fun,
which he is doing, sticking to it. He's being a referee. I don't know what referring to
it. It's one of those things where people do that to me on Twitter when I make a joke and they go, oh yeah, stick to your day job, and I'm like, yeah, my day job is writing, so I'm gonna keep doing it. But the his son, Dean Windass's son Josh, now currently a player, sticks his head out the window and says to the referee, yeah, you duck egg.
the nicest insult in the whole book,
the nicest insult in the world. And then the referee like finds Dean Windass and like he gets him suspended for 5 games. And
I don't know if that is that a nice insult.
It's I think nice
it's duck egg.
Yeah. Oh, does it mean something? Does it mean something?
I think it's baldest, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Oh,
yeah. So he's heard Dean. Oh. He's heard Dean. Mm. And recently, we recently saw a referee headbutt an EFL player for being baldest. So
do you know what? I think I've thought of a new TV show that Dean Windass could do. It could be he could be like Hastings in Line of Duty, finding bent refs.
Sniffing them out. Sniffing them out. When I mentioned Dean Windass's TV vehicles, I didn't expect us to have quite as many as his agent's gonna have calls coming in all the time.
There was another bit in this section about refs that I just wanted to very quickly mention. But did anyone else try and jump without using their arms when they read
because what the explain?
Because he says he makes a really good point.
Yeah, he says that refs often send people off because they jump using their arms, but you can't jump without using your arms. So I've read it. I thought, of course, you can jump without using your arms. You cannot jump without using your arms. He is totally right.
I was going to do the same thing, but I was reading it on the tube, and I thought I can't try it. But then what I loved was reading the book like this on the tube was amazing, because I was like reading it like this because I wanted everybody to see that I was sitting on the tube reading.
Usually we try and cover,
yeah, that doesn't usually happen with the books we do.
No. I'm proud.
However, I think social media content this week, we have to all try to jump. With no arms. See how that pans out. And then towards the end of the book, Dean goes back to Bradford. He turns down Wigan when they're in the Premier League, which is really interesting. I thought because he wants to make sure he plays, which is really nice. I thought quite commendable. He goes back to Hull, where he plays up front with John Parkin for a bit. And I can't think of a bigger front two in history. Is there a bigger centre forward?
It's like Godzilla versus Kong.
It's just huge.
There's a big one at the moment at Grimsby between two players called James Hansen and Linnell John Lewis. And the only reason I bring it up is because Linnell John Lewis's chant is "His name is a shop. His name is a shop."
Yeah.
Linnell John Lewis. His name is a shop, which is my favourite chant in football.
That is better than everything Ken has ever written for us on the show. is James Hansen the chap who played for Bradford?
Yeah.
He's a big lad.
They're both. Not as big as those two, I don't think, but they're both,
big boys.
Two target men up front, yeah.
Very, very true. And also Ray Parler was at Hull. I totally forgot Ray Parler went to Hull.
Mentioned that. I Googled that as well, because it was unnerving.
15 games, apparently. Who remembers that? But the thing that I really enjoyed towards the end of the book is when he starts thinking about what he's going to be doing off the field when he's finished his career. We've mentioned before, he talked about he wants to be a manager, so, of course, naturally, he gets his badges. And this is something we haven't really talked about on the show, but it pops up a bit. Footballers doing their badges and how it basically just turns into football animal house. It's just players going off to uni to study for a little bit and it turning into drinking carnage and them living in little single beds and stuff like that. Actually, like in digs, effectively, which are great. There's a moment. So I was playing for Middlesbrough at the time. And there were three of us on the 10-day course at Keele University. Paul Ince, Mark Crossley and me. But there were plenty of familiar football faces when we got there, including Sean Gota, Brett Angel and Peter Schmeichel. They turned out to be great characters and we formed a really great bunch, especially when it came to the late night drinking sessions in the college bar. Being in a university, we were these poxy little student rooms with a small single bed, a cupboard and a portable TV. There was no room to turn around, let alone stay in them. Then he has a very funny image of Peter Schmeichel complaining about his tiny bed that he's killed.
Doesn't he say that Peter Schmeichel let out like a scream when he saw the room?
Ah!
He sees this box room and just like loses his mind. Bizarre.
I am three times the size of this bed. He is a very big, and then first of all, imagine how difficult it must be teaching a footballer. Is one thing I thought throughout this, because none of them, as they all say at school, they didn't really want to learn, and they especially don't want to learn now. They want to kind of pick these things up, but they all say how they're distracting each other all the time. It's including this moment, which is very nearly a dramatic reading this week. They're in a classroom from 7 till 9. The work was hard and hot. Oh, that could be a sexy reading, actually. Maybe the weather outside.
About to get sexier.
Yeah, the weather outside. It is. The weather outside had been boiling, and the classroom felt like an oven. We were always moaning about putting the air conditioning on, but there wasn't any, so we had to make do with throwing open every window. They should have learned about that the first time they moaned about it. It still didn't make much difference. So one night, I decided I had enough and wanted to make a point. We all sat there in t-shirts and shorts. And so while they were asking their questions, I stripped everything off. They asked a question, I jumped up from behind my desk to answer it with my hand in the air like a little kid and my tackle dangling in the fresh air. Everyone in the room was pissing themselves and the coaches didn't mind. You need to have a sense of humour like that to get through it. I would mind if I was the lecturer and I turn around.
I would argue he's misremembering that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any... Yeah, there's no situation where a coach is like, yeah, great, I'm so glad you're naked right now.
He loves pranks. He absolutely loves pranks.
I have a real world tie to that section as well.
You had to lecture a naked Dean Windass once?
No, but Keele University, don't let the name fool you. It sounds posh, but it's actually in Stoke. And there's been this like long fabled story that Peter Schmeichel went on a big night out and got pissed in Stoke. This has just confirmed it. I always thought it was an urban myth, but there's pictures of him in like takeaways and stuff, but they're so blurry, you can't really tell. But it did happen.
There's no stories, on the grapevine, legend that Dean Windass was once naked in this lecture room. It's just Peter Schmeichel's night out. They should put a blue plaque up on there. Uni.
And this also suggests that this book is the influence for Fresh Meat as well. So that's
exactly.
another sitcom that we can tick off.
Very true, but with David Weatherall in it and stuff, as opposed to Jack Whitehall.
I would definitely watch that.
Yeah. Did the book change you, everybody? George?
Yes, 100%, because I will now... Go search. I'm going to come over to yours and get more of these books to read. So it's going to change my reading habits forever. But I kind of feel like I lucked out though. Maybe with this one.
Yeah, I think you could be right. Some of them are good. Oh, look, okay, you've listened to the show before. There's some good, some bad. But yeah, maybe you might change your mind when we're sat on my sofa reading Gary Monk's Loud, Proud and Positive.
That makes it sound like we're going to be reading it together, which I did not sign up for.
Totally misread that.
Yeah, James lying on the sofa, George's head in your lap.
I was gonna read it to George.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Tash, it changed you?
Yeah, because now I know that I can't jump without my arms, so I'll never make a fool of myself again.
We're learning so many things over the show. Jack, change you?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, I didn't realise that a man could be so driven by his hatred of rice that he could never look at another curry.
There we go. That's what you like. And it was generally a very, very good book
actually probably... The perfect blend of great football anecdotes, sincerity, and just interesting stories, really.
I'm very sad George and I didn't have the segment on the playoff push.
There are lots more photos, I would say, in that bit as well. He seems to go mad on the photo section with the playoff push.
Yeah, I mean, it is, because obviously we can't talk about it because it's not in our books. Like, it is one of the best EFL goals ever, which is a massive shock. I was, like, so gutted when I got to the end of the book and saw that the famous season where he scored the... It was one of the worst playoff finals of all time against Bristol City. It was one of the worst games ever, and one of the best ever EFL goals. And then the season after at Oldham as well. But I lucked out with my book because James, you sent it to me, and even though it doesn't have the chapter of the last season, I opened it and on the first page saw it was signed.
No way!
It's a signed Dean Windass book. And the best thing about this for me by miles is that I mentioned how he names everybody in the whole book. This is made out to Jamie, and then Jamie's crossed out and he's replaced it with Neil.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
So I don't know what's happened there.
What?
I don't know if whoever's asked him to sign it has basically been like, oh no, I got the wrong, you've done the wrong name, or if it's been re-given, maybe JB gave it to Neil.
Maybe Dean's just awful with names, we figured out. Like, the Terry and the Ken thing.
But maybe he's so good with names.
Maybe he's awful. Maybe he's misnamed every single person in the book. All the funny stories that happened with Paddy Kenny were actually happening with Lee Bromby.
He didn't play for Hull at all.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's bumped up your score, but rating out of 10, George?
9.
Wow.
Oof, high.
9. Yeah, has to be. Great, great man, great player, great book.
That's a very high score. Tash,
I'm going to give it a 7. I did enjoy it.
I'm gonna go 8. I'm gonna split the difference between you two because I really enjoyed it. I just wish it had been a bit more, and apparently there was a bit more, which I didn't get to read. So that might have pushed me to a 9 as well. Jack,
I'm gonna go 8. I thought it was a really, really well done book. I thought it was great.
I think now that means 16, 24, 32. It's got 8 on average. It's level. It's joined Karen Brady. Brady's played the blues at the top of the table.
I think that's fair.
I think that's fair, genuinely.
And it is technically 4 times better than Alan Hansen's Strangest Football Injuries. So.
Yeah. But,
Okay, for the quiz this week, you're all named after jobs Dean had before football. So Tash, you're a frozen pea packer.
Yes.
George, you're a rice sorter. And Jack, you're a brick cleaner. I think a job okay. where you had to scrape some shit off bricks, I think. Is that literally how he describes it, I think, at some point. So just shout your name out, your new name out when if you know the answer. Question 1, name any of Dean Windass's favourite musicians.
Oh, Brick Cleaner. Oh.
Rice Sorter was in first.
Roy Orbison.
Yes, that was the one that, yeah.
Is correct. Anyone else?
Enough of pretty women, Roy, he says at one point.
It's really funny. Got to turn off the music. Brick Cleaner. Elvis Presley.
Elvis is correct.
Because he gets really defensive in that bit. He's like, yeah, so what? I don't like modern music. I like old music. What of it? It's like, okay, cool. Chill out, Dean. It's fine. Lots of people like Elvis.
But I bet not many players who played for Hull in 2010 liked Elvis, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I suppose he was feeling very old at that point.
Yeah, possibly. That's possibly the case. I can't
Can
imagine
I
Fraser
get
Campbell.
One as well? Because there's loads.
Of course, Tash. There are a few.
Doesn't he like Brenda Lee?
Brenda Lee is another one. Yeah. Very true. And the other one I've got is Tom Jones, of course. He doesn't like
Oh,
Jones.
Yeah, of course.
So you're all tying after the first question. Exciting. Question number 2. What was we mentioned that Dean is very good with names throughout the book. What was the name of Dean's first manager for Hull's Gypsy Town Boys? He's got a great name.
Oh God. It's not this, but there is also the name like John and Brenda Christmas at one point. that's not linked to this at all. But
that is,
just,
there is someone
yes.
called that.
Yeah, yeah. That's where he stayed in his digs. Lloyd Christmas's parents from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. It's true.
But I can't remember this person.
Anyone got this?
Oh, is wait, Brick Cleaner Upper.
Yep.
The first name is Dougie.
No, that's not right.
It's not. It's the same name twice.
It is the same name. I'll let you out of your misery. Ooh. It's Dave Davison.
That's it.
It's his name. Dave Davison. A great name. Although possibly might not be his name. It could be Ken. Yeah. Or anything else.
Sound a bit
Terry Harrison.
Actually, yeah.
Dave Davison. Number 3. Which Sky pundit said he'd shave his head if Bradford survived relegation?
Oh,
later did
Brick
so.
Cleaner.
On...
Brick Cleaner.
Brick Cleaner's in there very quickly.
Rodney Marsh, because I remember watching that live when it happened.
Yeah, that it does ring a bell.
I sat down at the TV. I was like, brilliant. I want to watch this man get his head shaved.
It is, and he does it on the pitch of Valley Parade, as you say. Yeah, and good. Finally, whose shirt does Dean have framed on the wall in his hallway?
Royce Sorter.
Got me.
Rice Sorter.
Did you say Royce Sorter? As in like Marco Royce?
I was going for Roy Orbison again.
Yeah. Roy Orbison Sorter.
Yeah. Thierry Henry.
Thierry Henry is the correct answer. So at the end of that, Rice Sorter and Brick Cleaner, you're tied on 2-2. Very good. And I haven't got a deciding question, so you have to live with that.
We'll share it.
Yeah, that's fine.
And as a joint prize...
James, fundamentally, I don't care.
It's going to be eating at you all night. As your prize, it's time for this week's Ken Zong. Previous on the show, we've had I Love It When You Call Me Leroy Lita and Danger, Danger, Mark Bosnich. Are you a fan of Ken, George?
Yeah.
Great, cool.
Yes.
Out of context replies. No.
Yeah. Today, we're very much early 2010s Premier League to the tune of the Elton John classic. It's quite a long one. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till your team cross over the halfway line. He's not a man you should mess with at all. Oh no, oh no. He's Francis Coquelin. Coquelin mopping up the ball away from home. And there's another line. Coquelin picks up a red and then heads out on loan.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a biting end.
Very representative of his career at Arsenal. So there we
Amazing.
Go. Another Ken song.
That's so
I hope
funny.
We all enjoyed that. If you've read this book or any book you've read, get in touch. Get in touch about anything. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at Footy Book Club, Instagram at Football Book Club, and on Facebook. Plus, we got that brand new email address, fbc@crowdnetwork.co.uk. Please get in touch with any Andy Crabb stories or anything at all, really. George, we're making this fake 90s and noughties player called Andy Crabb. We're trying to write his autobiography. Is there anything from the Oxford United history that you'd like to, you know, Andy Crabb to get involved in? Any moments that you'd like to have seen him play in?
From the 90s, Andy, when's he making his debut?
Late 90s,
you know?
Late 90s, I think he's mainly noughties footballer. So if it doesn't have to be Oxford, anything you'd like him to do, anyone you want him to come into contact with, we'll make it happen.
Maybe, why don't you, I am obsessed with CM 0102, Championship Manager 0102, even to this day. So what I would like is for him to have been one of those players who was incredible on that game.
Oh, that is a great
that
shout.
That is a great shout.
That is Cherno
like
Samba.
Mark Kirk, exactly, yeah. Mark Kirk, Falkirk, one of those players.
Yes. You know,
he turns out to be an absolute legend on the game, which could actually be quite difficult for him in his career because people expect too much of him.
I'm very much down for that. He's going to be the new Freddie Adu, I guess.
He also has to go on loan to Oxford and then have Terry/Ken threatening with a gun.
Yeah, the initiation ceremony. Okay. Because next week we're doing a wider reading special episode all about Andy Crabb. We're going to read you some of the stories you've sent us so far. So we'll make sure to include those, George. And George, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great to have you on. Do you enjoy it? Please.
I loved it. Yeah. Yes.
We could.
I said no. No, yeah. I thought it was awful.
Sorry.
Sat here thinking I was a goner. Yeah. Really, really enjoyed it and looking forward to keeping up with Andy Crabb's story in the next few weeks.
There's going to be a lot of twists and turns, I'm sure. make sure you listen to George's podcast, not the top 20. Isn't there a podcast called George's Podcast? I should probably be clearer with that.
Listen to both. I'm sure it's great.
Yes, so make sure you listen to that. We actually have a clip from one of your podcasts, George, which we'd like to play now on the show. Can you explain it to us, please?
Yeah, so definitely listen to Not the Top 20. This is from a podcast that we used to do for The Athletic called Going Up, Going Down. We now do the Totally Football League show, Extra Time. But on that, last summer, when basically football ended, we did a series of interviews with players who played League 2, League 1, Championship, Premier League. So worked their way up.
Ah.
And we interviewed Dean because even though he didn't play in League 2, as he's keen to point out in the book, where we were offered him and we knew that he was basically too good to turn down. So it's called The EFL Completed. And this is a story, which he doesn't mention in the book, which is really surprising, of how Dean Windass nearly and very much didn't play for the Republic of Ireland.
I said to Mickey, I've got an Irish grandparent. And I think we'd had a few drinks at the time. And about 3 or 4 days later, my mobile goes private number and I don't normally answer private numbers. And it was a woman. And I went, hello. And he went, hi, I can't remember her name, Janet. I'm Mick McCarthy's PA from Republic of Ireland, and I thought it was a wind-up. And I went, yeah, whatever. She went, no, serious, you were talking to Mick McCarthy at the PFL Awards? I went, oh, yeah, I was. He says, and he said, you've got Irish grandparents. Could you send your documents in? And I went, oh, no, I was only joking. And I wish I wouldn't. I wish I would have had some Irish grandparents.
Guys, I think we can all agree, after reading the book that we just read, that does not come as a surprise at all. But it's, like you say, a surprise. Didn't mention it in the book. What a shame. Huge shame. But make sure you listen to all of George's podcasts. He's on so many brilliant things. Thank you again for coming. And please do come back on. Also, thanks, Jack and Tash, blah, blah, blah. Any
okay, wow.
We You're both always had here. Our haircut to record this today. Don't be so rude.
Yeah. You both look lovely. You both look absolutely lovely.
Thank you.
I am my haircut
And
later.
George hasn't made an effort. So
I'm wearing a shirt.
It's true, he is wearing a shirt.
Excuse me.
Any last words to end the show on?
You duck egg.
I knew that was coming. I knew it.
You knew it. You knew
I
it.
Knew it. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Burke, Natasha Daniels, Jack Bernhardt, and George Ellick. It was created by James Bugg and it was a Crowd Network production. Thanks to Dean Windass for writing the book. It is a brilliant read. It's called Dino and it's available everywhere. The theme Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is using a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back next week with our Andy Crabb special. So if you have any stories you want to add to our made-up footballer's autobiography, please send them to us on socials or to our email address, fbc@crowdnetwork.co.uk. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Crowd Network. A place where you belong.